Well, tonight, several months ago, I had planned to come and speak to you all, maybe in a little bit of instruction, about humanism. And that's something that I'd really been interested in lately. But God had really been laying on my heart, maybe just lately, talking about what's going on and really seeing that there's some needs that a lot of people need to have met or are looking for needs to be met. And a lot of times they're trying to do it on their own. So what I'm going to do tonight is share, really not a time of instruction, but to share with you, for the first time I've ever done it in this length, but to share with you my life's testimony. And I'm just going to, you know, it's not going to be a whole lot of notes you can take, except for at the end I'd like to give you several keys that God can really use. But what I'm going to do is, why am I sharing my life's testimony? And one of the reasons is that sometimes I feel, and there's probably some of you out there, that you feel like you've had a background or you've had a past, you've had experiences that really are hindering your relationship with God and really give you no chance for a ministry, for a personal ministry. That God may not really be able to use you because you really don't have the kind of past that God could use. That God really can't change you. He doesn't have enough power to change you from the background and the past that you experienced. So that's one reason why I'm sharing. Maybe you can identify. Some of you that can't identify, you've grown up in some Christian homes, that is a blessing. That is tremendous. You should never feel ashamed because you don't have a rough testimony that someone else might be able to share. Tremendous blessing that God has given you a family and raised you in a Christian home. And there's just a lot of things that aren't dragging you along in walking with God, hopefully, because of that. But some of you, you can identify. You can say, yes, maybe I'm copping out a little bit. I really am not growing, and I'm just saying, well, it's probably not going to happen because my past, that's just the way I am. You know, things that have happened in my life, that's just the way I am. And we talk about developing a ministry. Well, I don't know if I can really have a ministry because I have so many problems. But I really don't feel that's true. God has more power than we can ever understand. And He can really use us and develop a relationship with us regardless of our past and our background. So I'm not standing up here to be such a great example. I'm not standing up here to be an extreme example. And I'm not standing up here to be so much a unique example, but just an example that God can change a person and work in their lives regardless of their past and their experiences. And first of all, I'd just like to share in a word of prayer. Lord, I just pray that at least a handful of people tonight that may be holding back, that may have just given up, or just feel that there's so many barriers in their lives right now because of some problems that maybe they just really can't have the kind of relationship with you that maybe so many other people are having, or that they really can't develop a personal ministry that others can have because there's so many problems. Lord, I just pray that you can speak through me to these people tonight. You can touch their hearts and really give them an understanding, a discernment in their heart, that they can really come to you and be really changed. First of all, just help them to realize that we must surrender ourselves to you, Lord. Just pray in your name. Amen. What I'd like to do is kind of start, instead of starting out when I was born, just give you a little bit of my parents' background briefly. My dad was born and raised in the Putnam City area of Oklahoma City. And basically, raised in a good home, success-oriented home in business. My grandfather founded Blackwood Business College in 1923, and there's just kind of a thing that everybody in the family was going to kind of uphold, at least all the males. And he was successful in high school. He was about a four-point student in his academics, and he strived to be a great athlete, at least in high school. And he lettered in three sports, was All-State in three sports his senior year and lettered nine times at Putnam City High School. And therefore, he really, you know, there's a lot of things that surrounded him that were success-oriented. And he had never tasted failure or defeat in his life in almost anything. And he got to college. He came to OU on a scholarship to wrestle. And some things happened. Some circumstances happened in his life. And it just devastated him. For the first time in his life, he'd faced failure and just some things that he couldn't handle on his own. And he was a Christian, a baby Christian that really hadn't grown. He had gone to church all his life pretty much, but really never got some tools in his life. And so when he faced the first bit of frustration in his life, the first bit of failure in life, he ran away, tried to run away from his problems. And so several years later, he ran off to Colorado, where he met my mom, eventually my mom. And she was 16 years old when he married her. And then a couple months after she turned 17, she had her first child, which was myself. And 3 years after that, she had my middle sister, Tammy. And then 3 years after that, Luella Faye. So there, I have two sisters. And the environment in our home is, you know, my parents took care of us, but there were some real rough times. Part of it came from the aspect, even though I said my dad hadn't grown much as a Christian, he was a Christian. He wanted to go to church, a certain kind of church. I think he was really kind of pushing to go to a Baptist church because that's what he really grew up in. My mom really had no religious background, even though she claimed to be Episcopalian at the time. And so there's a real struggle there. He wanted us to go one place, she wanted to go another place. And plus, they were immature people. And so there's a lot of bitterness as they grew up in their marriage, a lot of strife. And when problems came, it just increased the problems in our family. I can't remember a lot of distinctives back then, but I do remember basically that my parents fought a lot. There was a lot of verbal abuse, regardless of whether we were around or not. And one of the things I remember is walking into the kitchen one day, and my dad was sitting there crying, and my mom was screaming at him, and it happened and vice versa many times, but little scenes like that just came to my mind when I think about it. And so those were the things I remembered. It was just a lot of turmoil. My dad and mom separated several times, and my dad beat her up some, and he'd come in drunk, and my mom would do the same thing, and It was just a real rough time as a child. It was just kind of a blur at times, but there was just a lot of emotions that went through that I just kind of buried. And another one of the things that kind of caused a little rough time, there wasn't much stability. What we'd do is, it seemed like my dad really couldn't keep a job, and we would move. It seemed like I think I've lived in 30-some places in my lifetime. And a lot of those were when I was with my parents. My dad would move here and there and everywhere. So there was really, I'd start to develop some friendships, and we'd leave. I'd try to, you know, have to start all over again. And we'd leave again. So there really wasn't a whole lot of stability there, but at least, you know, we were with our parents. But at 8 years old, I guess it came to a melting point. And I remember my dad, he took out to work that morning, and I think it was in the summer because we weren't going to school. And my mom said, well, pack your bags. We're going to go somewhere. And I remember packing my bags. Thought we were going to go on a little vacation. And during the day, I was saying, well, when's Dad going to get home, Mom? And she wouldn't say anything. I think she just kind of ignored it or something. And anyway, later that night when we were gone and Dad hadn't come home, or wherever we were, I asked again. And finally she said, well, Dennis, I've decided to leave your dad for good. And I'm never going to get back with him. And, you know, he's really, some things she told me. And it took me a while to realize that. Probably, I think it took me several days, for what I remember. And it was pretty hard on me. You know, what little stability we already had was gone. And when I wanted to see my father, I couldn't. In fact, every time my father would try to come and see me, my mom would give a court injunction and he would be thrown in jail. And it just devastated my father. He had a hot temper, and he was very immature anyway. And already trying to run away from his problems in Oklahoma was still part of problems in his life then. And then when my mom finally left him, it was kind of a breaking point for him. And it just destroyed his life. And he again tried to run away from his problems, and he got thrown in jail a lot of times because of his temper and trying to go places. And eventually ended up back in Oklahoma for a while. And had about a 6-month stint in a mental hospital just to try to get back into the real world. And it was hard for me to believe that my dad had all those problems. And my mom, during that time, it was just like before as far as moving around. We would go back and forth different places. My mom found a boyfriend, and I don't even know how this happened, but we ended up going to Las Vegas for about 6 months, and then the boyfriend kind of beat on us quite a bit, so she got kind of rid of him, left, came back to Pueblo. We stayed there for a few months and then found another boyfriend. We went back to Las Vegas. And then this guy beat us even worse. And I remember, you know, he'd come out and we weren't wearing our shoes one time. And he came out and just started hitting me with the belt on my head and back and everywhere. And my mom caught him doing that. And she left him and came back to Colorado, and we stayed in Colorado Springs. And she really couldn't take care of us. She ended up trying to go to business school. I don't even think she finished her high school degree, so she was trying to get some kind of a GRE degree or whatever you call those. And so she was going to school, and she was trying to work and support three kids. Faye was about two, Tammy was five, and I was eight. And it was really tough for her. And I was basically the babysitter in the afternoons after school. The babysitter that was there before taking care of Faye would leave, and I would take care of the family. And here I was only 8 years old, and I really didn't know what to do. And sometimes my sister would run away, and I remember one time I was supposed to give her a bath, and I was getting the water ready, and she ran out down Main Street naked. And but it was pretty embarrassing. But yet some police one time found her in a park. And brought her back home somehow. I don't know how he knew that we lived where we lived. We lived in this little basement of this house on Main Street. And I think because of that, some authorities were notified and the welfare department was notified. And they came and told my mom that they're going to have to do something with me. Either she was going to have to find some kind of job that she could take care of us better. Or get some care for us. Or put us in a place that someone could take care of for us until she could. And so I remember we drove around the town a little bit and looked at some kind of child care places, and I think there were some couple Catholic homes, and she just couldn't do it. She just couldn't put us in something like that. And so she eventually was convinced that the best thing to do was send Tammy and myself, and keep Faith, since she was just a baby, down to Oklahoma City, where my real dad was, and he still was having a lot of problems, and he couldn't really take care of us. And through some circumstances, we ended up in the Baptist Children's Home in Oklahoma City. And during that time, not long after, my dad again couldn't cope with some of the problems he was having. He ran off to Hawaii and became a cab driver for 14 years. And I didn't see him for another 8 years. And so here I was at the Baptist Children's Home. My mom couldn't take care of me. My dad couldn't take care of me. I didn't really understand. Neither did my sister, Tammy, I'm sure. But one thing I did feel, one thing I really felt, was I felt deserted. I really didn't know that they couldn't take care of me. And it was just like my parents didn't love me anymore. And it was pretty rough on me. Here I was in a place I felt like was prison. But one thing I look back on is there was, for the first time in my life, there was some real stability. People, they really couldn't become my parents. They really couldn't care for me like you'd like your parents to care for you, even though they tried very hard. But at least there was some stability and some consistency. And I remember one part of that was that they took me to a church every Sunday. And after church, from 2 to 4 on Sundays, we could go and leave the grounds with someone else. And my aunt and uncle were very faithful. They would come and pick me up almost every Sunday and take me back home. And on weekends, when we could leave for the whole weekend, they would come and take me with them on the weekend. And my aunt, Martha, just kind of became a mom to me. And for the first time in my life, I started feeling what maybe unconditional love is really like. I mean, she just continuously gave me attention and showered me with love and encouraged me. And the same thing happened with my Sunday school teacher. He did the same thing. And all along, both my aunt and especially my Sunday school teacher were sharing with me about Jesus Christ, who could meet my needs, and how much God had loved me. And he loved me so much that he gave his only son to die for me. And I knew for sure that God loved me. And the little bit of love I understood is what I wanted. And I wanted to give my life to the Lord, and I knew I had a choice to follow Him. I didn't understand a lot. I was 9 years old. I guess that's the typical age we were told at Glen Eyrie. But but anyway, yeah, I was 9 years old, and I remember I was at False Creek, and I finally came to the point where I just wanted to follow Christ no matter what. And I wanted to be in heaven with Him. And I remember in False Creek doing that, and then eventually going down and telling my church publicly about that, and I was real excited about it. And, you know, one of the things that happens, I think, a lot of times is that when a child becomes a Christian, I'm not sure if it's just lack of understanding or what, but a lot of times what happens is people feel like if they take us to church and tell us the do's and the don'ts, that that's going to be enough to help us grow up to be fine Christian men and women. And that doesn't always do it. And in fact, very often it won't. And it didn't. And I remember specifically that one of the things, and again, people sometimes just don't realize how, you know, how to punish and discipline people. And I remember one of the things that that I don't even think they practice now, but one of the things back then was that whenever I didn't do something right, a lot of times I would find myself having to go in the living room, sit down and read my Bible for 2 or 3 hours at a time. And it was more of a punishment tool than it was, you know, something that I could really learn more about Jesus and about God. And so really reading the Bible wasn't something I really wanted to do on my own time. And so basically that was a pretty stable 4 years, even though I didn't like it. I mean, I didn't run away. It seemed like everybody ran away, but I just didn't feel like that was the right thing to run away, because I felt if I ran away, I would never get back with my mom. And another thing that happened was, is I knew my mom wasn't a Christian. She didn't have Jesus in her heart. And I'd cry at nights, and I'd talk to my house mother and parents about that. And I wondered, what could I do to help my mom be in heaven with me? And I just didn't know what to do. And I remember they sent me to a psychologist for 6 months and thought that would help me. And then during that time, I continued to try to get some of my felt needs met. And one of the ways I did that was try to be an achiever. And so that's kind of when I started really trying to get attention by getting good grades. I remember we got a lot of rewards for good grades. And so I'd go out and try to get all A's. And when I did, I would get to go to a movie or something like that. And then in sports was the same thing, same kind of recognition. And so it just kind of became a habit that lasted for years and years. It still is something I have to deal with today. But anyway, at the end of about 4 years in the children's home, Tammy and myself, my mom had come down. And she had got remarried about a year earlier. And she came down and got us out of the children's home and took us back up to Colorado with her. And boy, we were excited, because finally we were going to get away from the surroundings we felt we were in. Even though it had been some positive things, it's just not, you know, you'd rather be with your family any day than be in the children's home. At least I felt that way. And so here we came back to Colorado, and my stepfather had grown up in a home where it was really stern discipline. He was not a Christian either. And here my mom, who had been raised up in a very stern German home, who didn't even understand how to express emotions or her feelings for people, and years later told me she didn't even know how to love anybody, and that's the reason why she would divorce so many times and try to find a new husband, because she just felt that, and she told me, she just felt that whenever she got tired of someone, it was time to leave and find someone else. And that's basically what she practiced and taught my sisters. And so anyway, we're in the setting, and it seemed like it was a honeymoon for several months. But then what's going to happen is, when you just don't really have control and you haven't really given it to the Lord, and you're just trying to live according to your environment you're around and the past that you've had, my mom still had the problems she had, and so did my stepfather. And here he was, all of a sudden, he had three kids, one that's 7, one 10, one 13. And it was a pretty hard step for him. He didn't even know how to raise a family, let alone run a family. And there's almost a repeat of what had happened before. I say the last couple of years I was with them before I went to college, they would get up in the mornings, and you know, I remember I'd get up after them, and they'd almost every morning they'd be screaming and yelling at each other about something. And I never knew everything it was all about, but they were continuously fighting and getting upset with each other. Another thing my mom did whenever we weren't obedient was that she would go to the phone and dial the phone and say that she was going to send Tammy and myself back to the children's home if we didn't do what we were told to do. And I really believed she was going to do that. And it just scared Tammy and myself to death. I mean, we would cry and scream and say, "Mom, we'll do anything. Please don't send us back." We would come over and grab her and just say, "Please, please don't do that. Don't send us back." And boy, it was just a lot of fear that I grew up with then, because I really felt that any time we were bad enough, we'd get sent back. And one of the things I remember is that it was like a love-hate relationship with my mom. At times, I just really wanted to be around her, and other times, I just hated her, because those emotions would start coming out. And again, it was another time in my life I had to just take those emotions and kind of put them down somewhere, hide them somewhere, and all that bitterness, and kind of hide it away. And then, after, they beat us a lot too, and I'll never forget my dad throwing rocks at me and stuff like that when he couldn't catch me one time. And I was a rebellious kid. I just couldn't stand living with him, but yet I didn't want to go out and live on my own. And it was a rough time. And I just didn't know how to handle it. But it happened to be that way, and I just was going to exist through it if I could. I just was going to wait for the time I'd graduate from high school and get away. But I remember middle of my junior year, my dad got a transfer. He was working for the government. We moved up to Alaska, where he's going to work for the Native Land Claims. And I thought, man, we're finally going to get away from all this mess, and things are going to be different, and everything's going to be great. And a new place to live, and a new environment, new friends, everything's going to be wonderful. And it really seemed to be that way for quite a while. In fact, Alaska was probably my favorite place I ever lived up through my high school years. And that was the time that I had become independent pretty much, because from the time I was 13 on, I pretty much worked for everything I had. Everything I did, as far as entertainment or any material possessions I got on my own, and even sometimes going to the dentist, I would have to pay for myself from the time I was 13 on. So I became very, very independent. My parents never seemed like they had time for me. My mom never had money, but she'd go out and buy a Cadillac. She never had money, but she'd go out and buy all these things for herself. And it was just hard to understand that. And so anyway, we moved up there to Alaska, and the independent person said, I've got to get me a job so I can buy the things I want. So I went and got a job eventually with McDonald's. And one of the things that McDonald's had promised me is if I did a really good job, and they were having this, what we call an All-America contest. And if I win that All-America contest, you get to go to the World's Fair in a brand new Learjet that's sent up by Ray Kroc, who started the McDonald's franchises, and you'd have a wonderful 8 days. And for me and the things that were going on, that to me was the thing I ate and breathed and slept about. I mean, that's what I was going to do. I was going to do whatever it took to be Mr. All-American McDonald guy. And so that's what I did. I remember going through tapes for hours and hours on end and doing all kinds of stuff just to make sure I could do this and do it well. And eventually won. In fact, the little award my specialty was, well, the little award I got was it says Dennis Blackwood, best buns. And anyway, that meant my specialty was preparing buns and getting them ready for the hamburgers. And so anyway, that was another sense of recognition. It was a tremendous time, and that was a sense of recognition. And then I remember that was between my junior and senior year of high school. And then my senior year, I got on I was playing tennis, and that was when I was really peaking in my tennis. And we had the number one team in the state, and things were going really good. And again, I mentioned my parents didn't have time for me. I remember I played a lot of sports when I grew up, and I think my mom came to one basketball game in my life, and my dad came to one tennis match, and they never came to my baseball games or anything else. And so again, it was always trying to be Dennis by himself, and I was always looking for recognition from my mom. I'd bring home good grades, and she'd say, I expected that. I'd show her a trophy. Well, that's really good, Dennis. She'd say, oh, I did that too when I was younger, or something like that. It was always comparing with my mom. It seemed like I was always competing with her. And so here comes the day, state championships. I'm getting ready to graduate. And here we have the semifinals and the finals, the day of the state championships in tennis. And my parents were going to come. They had told me, oh, we're going to come and watch. And I was so excited because finally my parents, both of them, were going to come at once and watch me play tennis. And I was so excited about it. And I went to bed that night, had a hard time sleeping, but got up and got my Gatorade ready. And I was psyched. I was really psyched. And about 5 minutes before we had to leave so I could get to the match place, I knocked on the door and I said, are you all ready yet? And no answer. And I finally knocked on again a couple times. And finally, they said, come in. I walked in and there they were sleeping in the bed. And I said, my match is in 30 minutes. And I thought you were going to come to the game. And they said, well, we're just too tired. Why don't you go ahead and go on? And boy, I tell you, maybe that's one instance, but it was like it came to a climax. Because what I felt, and maybe not what they were trying to express, but what I felt was that, Dennis, we don't love you. We don't really care for you, and we don't really care for what you do. Why don't you just go do what you want to do and just leave us alone? That's what I felt. And I had bitterness for years because of that one thing that really kind of culminated a lot of other things. It was a bitter pill to swallow. And it was pretty devastating for me. And I just couldn't wait until I got out of there. And I was going to go to either Air Force Academy or Colorado State University or somewhere in Colorado. And for some reason, my uncle kept sending me all these brochures about Oklahoma State University, you know, because they had all gone there and they said it was a great school. And so the Air Force Academy didn't have business or architecture, which is what my interests were. And so I decided that I'd probably take my uncle's advice. And I remember about a month before school, I decided to go to OSU. I didn't know anybody there, and I didn't want to go back to this flat, windy place with bad memories. But I did. And it was a tremendous 4 years. God really used that because God really worked. He worked not only through the home situation, through those times in my life, but here came a time in my life, best 4 years of my life up to then, and that college experience, and really guarded me, got me around people. Here I hadn't grown as a Christian, but yet He was planting Christians around me at college. I remember that summer, the first summer after the first year, I really felt convicted. I knew God, you know, God at times was, He would really draw me to Him, but then I would just not choose to get to know Him better or spend time with Him or do whatever it took to help myself grow, because I knew that my parents weren't going to help influence me in that area. But yet, it wasn't until then that I really felt that I needed to do something. I remember I got back in my sophomore year, and this girl I wanted to date, I kept asking her out, and she wouldn't go out with me. And finally she said, "Well, I'll tell you what, we got a revival. Would you go with me to that?" And I don't even think she thought I was a Christian. I sure didn't show it in my actions. And so I went. And the guy there was named Chester Swore, old man, but he really knew college students. And, you know, there's about 500 of us there. And I felt, after the thing was going on for a while and Chester was sharing some things and God was really speaking through him, I felt like I was the only one sitting there in that whole congregation. And that God was speaking directly to me. I mean, I figured He must have found out who I was and just made a sermon just for me. God really spoke to me that night, and I was ready to grow, to know Him better, and I was ready to do anything that God wanted for me to know Him better and to grow. And so one of the things I knew you're supposed to do and what people were telling me to do is go to church. So I started going to that church. They said, "Well, you ought to get in a Christian organization." So I joined Campus Crusade, I joined the Baptist Student Union, and I joined the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Kind of overdid it, but God really used that time. And I said, "You need to get in a Bible study." So I got in a Bible study. And, you know, "You need to get a Christian fellowship." So, you know, everything I did was with Christians. And but I really did grow. God used those times. I really kind of haphazard did it. I really wasn't discipled. But God used that time. I didn't understand some of the Christian disciplines to put in my life. But again, God still used that time. And that's one reason why I think the BSU here is just so tremendous. Because beyond just helping you grow, there's so many things that can happen in your life if you're just willing to be a teachable person and get around the people that will help teach you. So anyway, I graduated, and I felt God maybe lead me into like a two-year ministry for Him, like my Mormon friends used to go on all the time in Alaska. They go on a two-year ministry, and you know, and I really knew that Mormonism was really a cult, and it was not Christianity. But I really identified with serving God for 2 years, like what they thought they were doing. And that's what I thought. Maybe I'd do my little stint for 2 years. But it didn't work out. And Shell Oil had asked me to work for them, and I eventually worked for them down in New Orleans. And here was a new stage of my life. And some of those things I was learning in college really took off at this time. For example, as I was getting involved with Shell Oil, there was tremendous growth. I got involved in a church that was just met my needs, and I got involved in the college and career study, and I was kind of a co-leader. And a lot of times when you become a leader or something, not that I suggest you do that, I suggest you become a follower first. But one of the things is it caused me to really study God's Word. And I probably studied God's Word better then than any other time in my life. And it really taught me a lot. And I think we're going through the life of David most of the time. I really learned a lot of things about being a godly man. And I really wanted to be that kind of man. And Everywhere I went, I would witness to people that weren't Christians. I'd get people from church, and we'd go down to Bourbon Street and witness to people on the street. And that was a pretty interesting time. But anyway, it was a tremendous experience. And, you know, most of my time was spent with Shell Oil people. So, you know, I'd witness to all of them. And I'll never forget sitting down one time at this table, and this guy told me, he said, "You know, Dennis," and I'd witnessed to him some before, and he was a territory manager. He was about 55 years old, and he owned this big old bar in New Orleans, and he was doing pretty well. But he used a lot of unethical things in his work with Shell dealers. I had 45 stations that I was responsible for. And I remember him sitting down one day, and he said, "Dennis, you know, the problem is with you is that I have a lot more freedom than you do." He said, "You know, you're a pure Christian, but I'm just a regular Christian." He says, "You can't do anything. You can't have fun in life, and you're just wasting your life." And he said, "You should be sleeping around with all the girls you can and all these things." And he was lecturing me and telling me how important it was that I do all these things. And he says, "The thing about me is I can do anything I want during the week and confess it on Sunday." He said, "You're just wasting your life." And I said, you know, in my mind, "And this is the guy I'm going to have to work with for the next 5 years. Close, side by side." And most of our work was in smoke-filled bars. And 90% of the time. And I just realized that really wasn't what I wanted to do. Not that everybody in Shell Oil does that, but he did. Pretty much have a lot of flexibility. And I had mentioned that to a few people. And the word came across to my sales manager. And I remember one day he called me in the office and he said, "Dennis." And the other thing about it is I really wanted to be a great employee. I really wanted to be successful in Shell Oil and go up to however far I could go up. And he asked me and he said, "Dennis," he says, we realize that you may have a hard time working with so-and-so, and we really don't have any choice but to assign you to him. And since that probably wouldn't be the best thing, why don't you resign?" And it was pretty hard on me, but not that hard. You know, I didn't feel so hot and shed back a lot of tears at the time. And I didn't know what I was going to do for several weeks, but God really used that. And eventually led me to get around some people. I really wanted to be a teachable person. And I remember this Fellowship of Christian Athletes guy asked me to come and get involved with him. And I remember I'd been in FCA and in college, and he wanted me to help with the athletes. So I was willing to do that. And basically what we ended up doing is going around and speaking for about 7 months. I'd go around and speak to high school groups and start huddle groups and do whatever Jim wanted me to do and do things with the pro athletes and set up things that were going on and plan things and stuff like that, which pretty much was fairly natural for me to do anyway. But God had put in my heart to really try to get into personal ministry somewhere along the way. And eventually God led me to Youth for Christ, where I worked for 2.5 years. And God really used that time to teach me some things. And it was a good 2.5 years. I committed to spend that 2.5 years, and then I was thinking about going back into business, because that's really where my dream kind of was after I did my 2.5 year stint for God. And so, anyway, as the time was winding down, I felt the Lord really lead me into full-time ministry. And some of my desire for years had been with college athletes, college students, even though I didn't feel adequate at the time after college. And one of the ways to do that, after I realized that that's what the Lord wanted, and talking to some people, was to go to seminary, and I was planning on doing that. About that time, I met Susan. And I had just previously really laid out my life to God and said, "God, take me and use me however you want to use me. I don't care." Again, you have to realize through all this time and all these things that are happening, there's some real blessings in my life, but still I've repressed all this stuff that's happened in my past. I still hadn't dealt with it. I repressed it. But by my own individual self, I kind of pulled myself up by my bootstraps somewhat and still let God help me. Like the guy was sharing at the retreat, Christ and I, you know, when Christ wasn't able to handle it, I was. And that's pretty much how I lived my life for a while. But things were really going well, and I was growing in the Lord, and I met Susan. And we started dating, and I really wanted to be the godly man and date her the godly way. And that's what happened at the start. It was really great. But you know what happened? I started getting infatuated with her. I started getting so excited about her, I lost my excitement for the Lord. Everything I did was centered around her. I did my ministry, you know, kind of went through the motions. But everything I did, I spent all my time with her. And you know what happened is I didn't spend any time with God. Hardly any time at all. And it wasn't long after basic principles I said I'd never do, I did. I compromised in my walk. And my walk with God was really watered down. And she had just started growing. I mean, she had a great roommate, great Christian roommate. She was just starting, Susan was just starting to grow. And here I came along and, you know, sure, that worked out really good. And here was a man that really looked like he was going to treat her nicer than she'd ever been treated before. But because I took so much of her time, I was a hindrance to her walk. And she really didn't know how to continue her walk that she was already in. And so her walk started decreasing. And again, she compromised too. And so we rushed into our marriage. 6 months after we met, we were engaged. 3 months later, we were married. And we didn't really know each other that well. And then we hadn't really dealt with some things we needed to deal with. We knew we were going to have some problems already just by what someone had already told us, especially with anger. Even though I really felt that I wasn't an angry person, but these tests said I would. And you know, it's true. After I got married, that anger surfaced faster than anything. And I had repressed it so well that for years I figured it must be gone. But boy, I was so selfish. And anger would come up, and some of the bitterness that my mom would come up, and I'd put it off on Susan. And it was just a terrible, terrible first year. I mean, that first year, it was a hate relationship we had towards each other. And I mean, we just couldn't stand each other. I mean, we were thinking about divorce. I was praying that God would take one of us to just get us out of that, because we weren't going to divorce, because I had promised my mom I'd never do that, because she kept telling me I would. And I said, never again will you ever say that to me, because I will never do that. And I'm not even sure if that's what did it, but somehow God kept us together, because we sure didn't want to live together, and we hated each other for that first year. And here we were put in a stressful situation right away. 2 weeks after we got married, I'm at seminary. I'm working 40 hours a week putting up siding on houses. I'm also a groundskeeper for this guy that Susan's a maid for, because she couldn't get a job, living in this little room, garage apartment, driving 45 minutes one way, back and forth to seminary every day. It's a stressful situation we were in, needless to say, besides our immaturity. And so, again, all of that pressure and the anger and the hate that we had towards each other, there were just a lot of problems. And we weren't willing to really deal with them. We weren't willing to tell anybody. And I remember when we moved down closer to Fort Worth, it just wasn't working out where we were at. And this guy I was playing basketball with told me about this church. And it was really different. It sounded different to me. But he said that God will really help you grow at this church, because it's really changed my life. And I said, well, sure, I don't mind checking it out. Susan's kind of grown up in a traditional church, but I don't think she'll mind either. Well, you know, sure, I didn't tell him, but I was open to anything that would help us. And we got down there, even though I wasn't willing to tell people. That's the thing. I still kind of hid that. But we started going to Hope Baptist in Fort Worth. And here's the things I noticed. For the first time in my life, I had one other friend that was my age during the time I was down in Houston that made a tremendous influence on my life at that time, was a guy named David Doster working for Campus Crusade. He was a friend of mine. We sold books door to door. And he kind of sacrificed his summer for me. He didn't get any money from me, because I wasn't even on his team. But he would come by and pick me up. He would encourage me. He would help me. He would do everything he could for me that summer. And he was the first guy that was a Christian that I really felt was a man of God that I'd ever been around, that really practiced what he preached. And he loved me and prayed for me and encouraged me that summer. And then when we got together after those years, and he was in Louisiana and I was in Houston, we'd get together a lot. And I came back there just totally rejuvenated every time I met with the guy. And so that was the first guy my age I'd really met that really made a difference in my life. But then, here we're at Hope, and people all over the place are like this. I just couldn't believe it. And they really were people who followed God. They really thought through and were obedient to God. And another thing that really marked them was they were servants. They served everybody. I mean, I'd even feel ashamed when they'd serve us. But they would serve you. They would take care of you. They would help you. You know, they weren't always running around trying to be a leader somewhere. But they'd get involved in doing things like setting up chairs and serving God faithfully through that, or whatever it was, but they would serve. And another thing that I was never used to and never really saw before is they go around asking for forgiveness from different people. I mean, I saw people going to other people asking for forgiveness all the time, and occasionally they'd come and ask me forgiveness. And I never really I experienced that in my life. And here people are really doing that and really meaning it. And they were very open. And another thing is very key, very, very key, is that no matter where they were in their Christian life, if they had a problem or if they needed some help or just some general counsel and direction, they didn't try to do it always on their own, but they sought help. They knew that God could use other people to help give them discernment, and that's what they did. They'd go and seek help. They'd seek counsel, and if people had problems, they'd seek counsel. I remember this one couple we got to know. I thought, you know, Susan, I thought we had the worst relationship there ever was in the history of Christianity. But anyway, we got with this couple, and we thought they were just the neatest, godliest couple. You know, there were so many of them, but you know, we got to know them, and they were pretty neat. And I found out about a year later, as we were going through some things together in accountability, that his marriage probably even worse than ours at the start. Not that every marriage, don't get fearful that all your marriages start out this way. They don't, you know. But they had basically made some wrong decisions before they got married too. But God had totally changed their life because they were willing to let God and give their whole life and their problems and their backgrounds to God. And that was exciting to see that God could do that. And then God also gave us and allowed us to be around other couples, like this couple back here, Norman and Denise Williams, who are from Nashville, Tennessee now. Made a tremendous impact on our lives. We got around him. We spent a lot of time with him. And Norman, we'd get out together, and he would ask me some hard questions. He would even keep me accountable on some things occasionally. And I got to see how he reacted to situations. And it was just tremendous to get to know that couple because they would follow through with what their convictions were. And so many times I could see that I wasn't doing that. And they were. And it would challenge me. And also, the guy that was the staff person, a guy named Craig Schroeder, and his wife, who discipled Susan. For about a year and a half, they discipled us. And boy, it was just tremendous. And for the first time in my life, I was willing to go and seek help. I was willing to air it out, all the problems, all the frustrations, and share those with him. And he helped me deal with those. I mean, I didn't all clear up in a short amount of time, but he helped me deal with a lot of the things I needed to deal with. And he helped me be able to be thankful to God in all situations. He helped me to see some things that I never could see because I put blinders there. And it was just tremendous being around him. But it was one of the reasons why God changed my life so much then was because we were both willing to seek help. We were both willing to let God work through other people to help us. And we were also both willing to be obedient because that's one of the marks of the people there, is they're obedient to God. You know, we still were having some problems in our Christian disciplines, but God was working through those times. And then over the years, some of those Christian disciplines, spending time with God and getting to know Him better and being faithful to Him in prayer and developing our prayer life, that all kind of started then. And then here we came to OU. God really led us here, and so we're so excited about being here. But one thing is, besides us being able to minister to other people, God has really, truly ministered to us. God has blessed our lives. And some of the things that we've been obedient to God, God has continuously blessed. And so I look back and I say, God, you can really use a person that may have had an abused past. You can, you know, it's not a cop-out. I remember when we were married, there was no way you could convince me in this world. I was going through seminary just because I didn't want to look bad in front of people by dropping out. And there was no way you could convince me whatsoever, no matter what you said, that God could use me anymore because of the way, kind of person I was at that time. That first year of marriage. There's no way you could convince me that Susan would ever be the kind of woman that God could use. I mean, neither one of us really thought that our marriage would really last, but even though we weren't willing to leave each other. And I just felt we'd go through life, even though we married the wrong person. You know, no one ever told me what you do when you marry the wrong person. You know, I thought that's what we did. But God showed us we married the right people, and we worked through it. And but God has really shown that He can use anybody that's willing to give their life to them. So here's some last points I want to give you. And I'd like you to take a couple of them down. And that is that some of the keys to really being able to have a strong relationship with God, regardless of your past, to be able to develop a ministry, regardless of your past, regardless of your background, there's no cop-out that you can come up with that can overcome what God can do in your life. And that is one of them is to surrender to God. I mean, surrender everything. Don't just say it by words, but totally surrender everything you are to God. All your past, your present, and your future to God. is confident that God will do what he had promised, that God has power to do what he had promised in his scripture and in his word, as it says in Romans 4, 20 and 21. And to develop that confidence, you must be in the word. You must be in relationship with him. Therefore, another part of that is to continuously, consistently get with God. You know, we talk about it all the time and you hear about it, but boy, there is no other way. There is no other way. You cannot do it on your own. You must get with God. There's just no other answer. And another thing is obedience. You must be willing to not only surrender yourself, but to follow God in obedience. Follow God in obedience. And a part of that obedience, for me, came in a lot of different areas. But basically, it was to say, immediately follow God in what he had directed me to do. Immediate obedience. And thirdly, is very important, and I think that's one of the probably the main reasons I'm up here tonight, is some of you need to do this because your relationship with God is being stymied because you just let yourself say that there's nothing that can happen better than this, than life right now, because you just got too many problems in the past, or that you'll never develop a ministry of your own. And that is that you need to seek to get help. You must humble yourself enough. You know, if you surrender yourself to God, he'll help you do it. But to humble yourself, to be able to say, yes, I have some problems. You may know you have plenty of problems, but to tell someone else, yes, I have some problems, not shade them over and make them look better than they really are, and just be honest and share those with someone else that can help you. Get someone else that can help you and can give you some wisdom that is growing and is mature, more mature than you are in the Lord. And get some help. You know, there's plenty of good people to seek help from. And starting with, you know, if you're in the BSU, starting with some of the staff here. They can help you. Some of them can identify even with your past. And if they can't, at least they know God and what his will is and what his word says. And they've dealt with a lot of people that have problems like you, believe it or not. You do not have the worst problems in the world. And everybody has problems, but some of you just are stymied right now in your walk. And you need to seek some help. So those three areas are very important, but God can change your life, but you must be willing to give it to him. You must be willing to die, as it said in the song, to die to yourself and to give yourself to him completely. Everything, your past included. It's not a cop-out anymore. God can work through that. And please, if you can, seek help. And so I say, if you can. What that means is, yes, you can. So just be obedient and do that. Let us pray. Lord, I just want to just ask you to ask for wisdom. And Lord, that there's some hurting people, I know even out here tonight, that have had some past to deal with, that they've tried to deal with on their own, or they're just continuously focused on their past and never toward what you can really do in their lives right now. Lord, I just pray that they humble themselves, Lord, that you can give them strength to humble themselves to the point where they can say, yes, I need some help and I'm willing to seek it and to actually do it, Lord. I ask that, I know obedience is sometimes in our society seems to be a really stupid and negative word, but it's not. Because it's amazing how much you give us abundant life and joy in life when we follow your will. And when we're willing to follow you in your footsteps and just give our selfish desires away to you, because this life can be so much better, even through the ups and downs of just living in this world as we follow you, Lord. And I just thank you for how you can work through people and all the people that you've changed their lives so much because they're willing to be obedient to you and to humble themselves. And Lord, I just pray that tonight, what you shared through me can be a catalyst for some of the people tonight to be able to do that very thing, is to take charge now as far as committing themselves to the Lord and surrendering themselves to the Lord and going about what they need to do to be able to deal with some of the backgrounds that they've had so that they can be really used by you, but not only used by you, but have a tremendous growing relationship with you, at least to start today. I ask in your name. Amen.